Hi, Margaret.
Hello.
I just want to say thank you for Margaret for joining us this evening. Margaret is an educator, as well as somebody who explores personal development skills and has a very playful, very light approach to learning and growing and trusting the self. And so tonight, Margaret is going to be speaking on how to sleep better and rest better. Over to you, Margaret. I'll be joining you for the questions and answers later. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So, I guess it's a topic that really the whole sleep topic ha has probably all my life has interested me. And I think the reason that it really interests me, and maybe the same reason why it interests you, is that we have to do it every night. We have to do it, 365 days a year for all our life. And apparently most of us spend about a third of our life sleeping. So, if that's what I have to do every day, I have been looking at over the last several years about how to, in a way, get the most of your sleep. And I've learned from reading different books about it, but also because I have that interest, I've been observing myself too. So I have my own personal journey of observation of sleep, and so I thought I'd just start with some specifics, and some of you may already know these specifics, and some of you may not. Just every night when we go to sleep, so much is happening when we go to sleep. So I think, as a child, you put your head on the pillow and you go to sleep, and you wake up and that's it. You don't really have much idea of what goes on, unless you're someone who has quite a lot of dreams. And even as an adult, we put our head on the pillow and wake up in the morning, and we don't realize really so much about what's going on, but a lot is going on. And in fact, while you're sleeping on a physical level, your whole body is being rejuvenated, sort of ready for the next day. And also your mind is being cleared out of a lot of toxins. So your brain is being cleared out of a lot of toxins, and your mind is being kind of consolidated, like your memories are being consolidated. So a lot is happening while you sleep. And the thing is that I guess before the Industrial Revolution, people kind of went to sleep at dusk and got up at dawn, something like that. And of course, before the electric light bulb, basically when it got dark, okay, you lit a candle, but there was a point where, you went to sleep. And since the Industrial Revolution, in a way, our sleep patterns have changed quite a lot. And, I remember when I was growing up, 60s and 70s, I think television finished at 10:30, and there wasn't anything else after that. I mean, so you could go read a book or chat to someone, but there wasn't any other TV or anything like that. Videos and everything came much later. And so pretty much, people would be go to bed after that. And then and nowadays, everything is available, 24 hours, 7 days a week. And literally you could be up all night just watching screens or looking at screens. And I think this is having a profound effect on us personally. In your sleep, someone, if we're having like normal sleep, you go through cycles of sleep, and they say the average cycle is about 90 minutes. So that's, an hour and a half. But of course, that's an average, and you may be less or more than that. And every night you go through several cycles. And so there's two types of sleep. There's what they call the non-REM sleep, and REM just means rapid eye movement. And then there's the REM sleep. So there's non-REM sleep and REM sleep. And the non-REM sleep has its different stages. So it's the kind of first stage is when you're getting kind of cozy, you know, you're putting your pillow right and you're getting sort of cozy in the bed. And then gradually you drift into different levels of sleep. So the first level is very light sleep. And if someone called out your name or a door bang or an ambulance went by, you'd probably wake up. But then as you go into progressively deeper sleep, then it's much harder to wake someone up. And when they have that phrase, he slept like a log, you know, there's a, you know, if you try to wake someone up when they're in a really deep sleep, it's quite hard to, you probably have to shake them. And it's really in this deep sleep or in the non-REM sleep, like this drifting into deep sleep, is when your body starts to become very still. And it's during that time that your body's been replenished and rejuvenated. So there's a whole process that's going on while you sleep. And then after that, you go into the REM sleep, and the REM sleep is a very different stage where your mind becomes very active and racing around. And that would be the time that you would have dreams. And then the cycle repeats. So it kind of goes non-REM sleep, REM sleep, non-REM sleep, REM sleep, and so on. And some people have 3 cycles, some people have 4 cycles, some people have 5 cycles. I feel that what is important, why it's important to know your cycles, is that if you go to bed at a reasonable time and you wake up naturally, that is the best. That is the best that you can do for yourself, because that means that the body has done its replenishing process, the mind has, you know, sorted itself out, the memories have been stored. It's the best you can ever do for yourself. But we're living in a world that many of us, including myself, you know, at times, wake up to an alarm clock, or, you know, and what happens then if that alarm clock goes off when you're in a deep sleep? Then you will feel quite groggy and it'll be hard to get up. You'll probably reach for the snooze button. But if you know your cycles, then you can set your alarm to happen more around a time where you'll be in a lighter sleep, and then the effect will be considerably less. So sometimes it's better to have less sleep and be at the end of a cycle, a REM cycle, then to have more sleep, and then you're woken up in the middle of a deep sleep. So that's why, you know, it's of interest to me, because when we haven't kind of completed a cycle, then it might take quite a bit to kind of get us going, and then we're like dragging ourselves into the morning. There's lots of documented evidence of sleep and the effect of sleep deprivation. And I think I went through some time in my life where I wasn't sleeping enough hours. I didn't notice at first, but I started to see the effect, you know, I would say that particularly when I look back, the thing that I realized the most was memory. I wasn't always remembering things. So what happens when you sleep is that your short-term memory goes into your long-term memory. It happens in that sleeping process. It happens in the REM sleep. And if we're not getting enough sleep, then memories aren't getting stored, so that when you look back at your life, you don't remember so much. And I think during that period now, when I look back, I don't have big memories of what really happened. So, of course, unless it was major events, but the kind of finer detail. Whereas if I look back at some of my earlier life, when I was getting quite a lot of sleep, I remember a lot in detail. So that's just something that I discovered for myself. And I do my best now to, you know, not to get into patterns of going to bed too late. And it is a pattern. And once you start getting into that pattern, it's quite hard to come out of. You have to kind of start doing things to come out of that pattern. But more than that, it also affects, you know, your state of mind, your capacity to learn. It affects your health, your immune system. So there's lots of reasons why it's quite good to pay attention. And I think you start to know if you are sleep deprived, because you're more likely to fall asleep in meetings. You'll need that extra cup of coffee in the afternoon to keep you going. When you get home, you just got to sit on the couch and you'll fall asleep. So these are kind of signs that you're not, and grumpy, more grumpy. You know, the thing is that sometimes if you haven't got enough sleep, you're more likely to be irritable. So if you see yourself that you're becoming more irritable for no big reason, you know, check your sleep. And, you know, we were told it, weren't we, growing up? Oh, it'll all be better after good night's sleep. We'll all look better after a good night's sleep. And it's so true that if you have a good night's sleep, you can handle things so differently than if you don't. And so it's such a good investment. In fact, probably for the, you know, if you invest in your sleep, the rewards are quite great. And if you deprive yourself of sleep, the rewards, the repercussions are quite great. So, you know, this is why it's important, but there's quite a few things that affect it. And so, you know, I guess, you know, sleep, whether you've got sleep or you deprived of sleep, affects all your life. It really is. If you've had good night's sleep, your approach to life is different. You're more likely to be enthusiastic, motivated, all these positive, all these things that we want. And if you haven't, so really sleep affects all your life. But there's also the other side of that equation, that life affects your sleep. So, you know, whatever we're predominantly thinking about during the day and the way we interact with others and, you know, the sort of things that we're doing, it really, really has a quite a profound effect on our sleep. And what we take into sleep has a big effect. And so, you know, when you're sleeping, when you go to sleep, your subconscious is quite active. And so what I've learned over time is that if you prepare well for going to sleep, and you go to sleep with like a clear conscience. They say that clear conscience is the greatest pillow. If you go to sleep with a clear conscience, you know, you've taken some learning from the day, you've let go of whatever you don't need to be holding on to. Maybe you've already written your list for tomorrow, so you don't have to be thinking about it. And then you go to sleep, then what you take into your subconscious is going to be very different than if you watch a horror movie, for example, you know, because those images and even when we look at like news, it's kind of horror, isn't it? Mostly it's horror. So you have to be quite careful what you watch and what you're feeding yourself before you go to sleep. And so I always suggest to people is look at the last hour before you even enter the bedroom, and what are you doing with your time? Because, you know, in the old days they said, you know, you get ready for bed, and we've come to think getting ready for bed is maybe brushing teeth, washing face, things like that. But actually, in ancient times, they used to really prepare themselves for going to sleep because they wanted to have the lucid dreams. They wanted to learn from their dream. You know, it's almost like extending their life, because not only did they have a waking life, they also had a sleep world. And so they would prepare themselves well, and they would want to dream, and they would want to record their dreams, and they'd want to take the messages from their dreams. So so how we're kind of performing during the day has a huge effect on what we take into our sleep. And so if we're looking at empowered sleep, shall we say, then someone who's really looking to get the most out of their sleep and have like even empowered sleep, not just ordinary sleep, would prepare very well before they go to sleep. So that might mean they write and they look at their day, and they're looking at what was good about today. What did I learn from today? Is there anything I would do differently? And then they would have some reflective time, maybe quiet time. You call it meditation or just reflective time. And in that reflective time, they would be aiming to feel calm, peaceful, because that's what they would want to take into the sleep. Also, gratitude. A lot of people write gratitude diaries. And, you know, gratitude is a very beautiful energy, appreciation, gratitude. And, you know, if we look at even during our day, even though, you know, there's always going to be things that came up, things, challenges, maybe we did them well, maybe we didn't do them well, but there's always learning in them. I mean, something came up today and I knew I thought about it too long. I just thought about it too long. And then I suddenly thought, I don't want to be thinking about this anymore. What am I here to learn from this? And as soon as you ask yourself that question, what am I meant to be learning from this? It kind of pulls your attention back from the situation, the person, towards yourself and your own progress. So it is a very good question during the day. And then at night, then you can add it to your learning. What did I learn today? And so, you know, getting ready for bed is really about preparing your consciousness to your mind, ultimately, your mind to be in the right receptive mood for sleep. And, you know, some of us don't remember our dreams, some of us do remember our dreams. So, you know, and also I think most people sleep better if they feel safe. So it's also thinking about in your life providing a kind of safe space for yourself, and doing things in that hour before that are relaxing, rather than doing things that aren't relaxing. Or, and we all know about the screens and the blue light of screens, and I would really suggest that you don't look at any screen about an hour before you go to bed, which is maybe means really changing a habit. And I know this, I usually don't do it, but there was something that someone was asking for me for the other day, and I didn't get around to doing it till, you know, quite late, and I did it and I couldn't sleep. I really couldn't sleep. So because I don't normally do it, I saw the profound effect of it. I also do not have any mobile or anything like that in my room. I put it outside the room. If I'm charging it, it's away from my room. I wake up to like a battery operated clock, and I just hit it and it's set for the same time the next day. So I don't have any gadgets in my room. And when one day I was running a course on sleep, and I was asking the participants to think about their room and their bedroom, and I said, okay, you're definitely allowed a bed, of course, and any bed linen and closet with got some clothes in it, but not too many. And, you know, maybe you've got a couple of books you're reading, you know, things like that. But I said, other than that, and maybe some toiletries, other than that, what is in your room? And one person said, you know, so they all wrote it down, and we kind of had quite a good laugh. Some of the things in the bedroom, you know, I said, does that really need to be there? And they said, no, it doesn't need to be there. So, but there was one person who, he was an IT expert, and he had so many gadgets. You know, they didn't have really, really big flat, and so they had so many, he had so many gadgets in the bedroom, but he was also having difficulty sleeping. And I said, well, why don't you try it? Why don't you try, you know, to take all the gadgets out and put them in the living room, and charge them up there, and just see how you go and let me know how it goes. And he wrote back to me after about 2 weeks. He said, it's completely changed my life. You know, I am getting so much better sleep without all the gadgets around me. So, you know, there's lots we can do to help ourselves, and there's lots we can do to hinder ourselves as well. So, so life, basically. And then the biggie of life that really affects us is our emotions. And I remember there was a time many years ago where quite big emotions came up. It was something, a family thing from the past. And from about 30 years before, and I could see that it suddenly hit some suppressed emotions that I'd obviously been carrying for a long, long time. And as I was working through them, I could see how it really affected my sleep. And then there was another situation at another time where I felt like I wasn't handling a relationship that well. I was, I just felt like it was, I wasn't positioned right in the relationship, and it was kind of influencing me. And I noticed then also my sleep was quite, I would wake up in the night and I'd find it hard to get back to sleep, whereas normally that is not my pattern at all. So emotions, so any kind of big life change, and we're now in, this coronavirus situation. And, you know, this is a difficult situation for many, because they, their whole routine has changed. They might have financial concerns, you know, relationships. Suddenly the people that were going out to work and going off to school, now you're all together. and this can bring up some, you know, some stuff really. So, you know, so there was some things I read today that, I've read today that people are having more dreams at the moment. Like it's a worldwide phenomenon that people are having more vivid dreams. And what they're saying is that could be because of, one, you are sleeping longer because, you know, you're getting home earlier and all these things. But also it could be because your routines, you're out of sync with a routine. And also, you know, that it could be the stress that maybe in the daylight hours we don't acknowledge to ourselves, but it comes out in the nighttime. And some of the people are great writers on sleep. They say that, you know, what we can't express in the day, we express at night. So, you know, that's a kind of phenomenon that's going on worldwide, is people are, you know, one, they're dreaming more, but also a lot of people are more insomniacs. And you know, it's so easy in these situations, isn't it, to watch more films, watch more television, watch more thing. But, you know, it's much better to keep a routine that's similar to what you had, you know. So maybe you are still working, or maybe you're not working, but maybe to find another interest that's the kind of similar hours, and keep your day as similar as you can to when you are working, because then the transition back will be easier, and also your patterns, you stay in certain patterns, like, you know, eat at the same sort of time and all these things. Which leads me on to another whole area about, you know, food has a big effect on our minds, and of course mine has a big effect on our sleep. And you know, to be sensible, isn't it, to not eat late at night. It's much better. They say to eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, and supper like a beggar. And I think there's a lot of truth in that, to make your evening meal light, the lightest. But obviously sometimes people's situations are different, and they can't do that. But maybe, you know, if you can have a good breakfast, and then, you know, try and work it out so you don't eat too late, because it has an effect. Also to drink a lot of water, but start early in the day and then taper it off, you know, by probably 5-6, you don't really need to be drinking that much if you've had a lot of water in the morning, early afternoon. Also, one of the big things about sleep is this hormone called melatonin. And melatonin becomes active when we're sleeping, so it's kind of like the sleep hormone, and this is very affected by the amount of light that we get. So, you know, if we're people who go out and we get our exercise and we're getting daylight, it really helps that the melatonin to kick in the nighttime. But of course, you can see now with artificial light, we could be inside most of the day with just artificial light. We're not really getting the the daylight, and therefore that could also throw off our kind of melatonin balance. And the interesting thing about melatonin is it's also very much related to the serotonin hormone, and the serotonin hormone, most of you might know, is the happy hormone. So you can see how the link between sleep and that melatonin hormone, and the link between feeling better, feeling good in the day, there's a big, big, big link for that. So, you know, if my life is not really going the way that I would like it to, and I'm not just talking about in this virus situation, but, you know, if my life is not going the way I want it to, maybe start researching your own sleep patterns, and maybe bringing some changes in your sleep patterns could make all the difference to how you feel in your life, how you operate in your life. You know, it's worth investing in it and doing your best. And we make mistakes. I mean, I've done it where, you know, I drank something too late and then I was up the night, and, you know, and the same with caffeine. You know, if you're going to drink caffeine early in the day and then try not to have it later, you know, because it does have an effect. Caffeine has a big effect on our sleep. The other thing that I wanted to talk about, empowered sleep, is that, you know, what we take to with us into our subconscious, and I've talked about the more positive, the better. And what I mean by that is that if you can, by the end of the day, have a really good feeling about yourself and your life, whatever that means to you, but you are, you know, you've worked towards feeling content in your life. And certainly if you increase your gratitude for life and your appreciation of life, you will feel more content. Because we have so much, actually, that we can be grateful for. And the difference between gratitude and appreciation, my idea of it is that gratitude is for what you have, and appreciation is for the qualities of thing. So, you know, you might be grateful for the people in your life, but appreciation is appreciating their good qualities. You might have a nice chair. Appreciation be appreciating that it's balanced, it's comfortable, it's sturdy, it's strong. These are the qualities. So, you know, when we can get this balance of gratitude and appreciation, it really, the more we work with that, the more it is easy to enjoy life and feel content. And of course, when we get into complaining and grumpy, and that just takes away our contentment. Comparison, jealousy, all these things will disturb us. And that also links into the whole kind of sleep process. The other thing about whatever we take into our subconscious, it'll be what comes out in the morning, our first thoughts. And there's quite a lot of research going on about the first 10 minutes when you wake up. And what I've experimented with is that the first 10 minutes when you wake up, I call it my prime time. And what I mean by that is that it's like your most potent time. So when you first wake up, to really be enthusiastic about yourself and your life, to have good thoughts about yourself, to have positive thoughts about yourself. You don't want to be waking up and saying, oh no, it's Monday, I've got to go to work. That is such a waste of your prime time. So the idea of your prime time is that you charge it up. So just like overnight you've charged up your phone, hopefully. So the same thing is overnight you've taken something good into your sleep, you've charged up your body, you've charged up your mind. And now when you wake up, you want to be like making sure it's fully charged. So those first 10 minutes, you know, to get out of bed and just think some really good thoughts about yourself before you do anything else in the day. And just that alone will make a difference. But the thing is, if you haven't prepared well before you go to sleep, then it's really hard to do that 10 minutes. So if you've just watched a horror movie when you went to sleep and you know, that's sort of gone into your subconscious mind, you're probably going to wake up feeling quite blah and you'll think, well, why do I feel like that? But really it's what happened, you know, the day before. So this is why writing at night or sitting quietly and reflecting, and even if, you know, things did not go well, there's going to be some learning in it and there's going to be something good that happened during the day. And I often see that life kind of juxtapositions things, that maybe some challenge comes, but also some really good thing comes. I think life never leaves us completely bereft. Like, I'm really noticing that, you know, during this coronavirus, Mother Nature, the weather has been quite unusual for England. I don't know if you've noticed this, but day after day after, you know, even though it was raining today, now look, it's sunny. So day after day after day, even though we've had to go through this thing, it's almost like there's a helping hand to get us through it. So at least when we do, can get out, it's pretty nice weather. So I've always noticed in my life that even if there is a kind of an adversity going on, then usually there's a kind of counterbalancing thing that I can appreciate, you know. So I think that I'm going to kind of close up with some practical tips, really. So if I was going to sum it up, I would say start writing. I'm a great lover of writing. And when I was going through my difficult time, well, I had two difficult times I mentioned, but when I was going through that, I wrote a lot at night. I wrote about all my feelings. And it really, really helped, really helped. And so it's almost like you're getting it out. And then when it's on the page, then you can think, it's not whirling around in your head all the time. It's now on the page, and then you can be a bit more objective about it. Whereas when it's whirling around in your head, it's very subjective. So, and actually, when I look back at those books that I wrote, and it was some books, I'll tell you, I was surprised because I thought it was going to be all about the event and the things that are going on. But when I look back, it was me trying to work it out, me trying to take the learning from it. So that was quite refreshing to be able to see that. And I saw how I progressed as I went along. So definitely prepare yourself well. But even during the day, do your best to get out and get some light, even if it's just going outside and standing. If you can go for a walk, great. If you've got a backyard, fantastic. But if you can, you know, get out and get some light. And even when it's England overcast, grey, there's still light, actually. So sometimes that might mean, you know, when you're back working or whatever's going to happen next, that, you know, you maybe get off a stop earlier and you walk, or you get off the bus a bit earlier and you walk, or you walk somewhere to a venue, or you think, rather than taking the car, I'm going to walk. And, you know, get into habit of getting light. And they say 30 minutes a day is really, really good to do. But you don't have to do all at once. You can do 10 minutes, 10 minutes, 10 minutes, or 10 minutes and 20 minutes, or all at once. So, but they say, you know, that's for good health and good rest and good sleep. That is good. Also, on the subject of rest, you know, sometimes in the afternoon, I will just lie down. It's not necessarily that I'm sleeping. Sometimes I nod off, but often not for long. But it's just I'm lying down and I'm just having positive thoughts. I'm just thinking nice things. And, you know, that is also very helpful. Because if you can do that during the day, and maybe you can't even lie down, but maybe you just relax, you just allow yourself to relax in a chair, and you just kind of feed your mind something positive, and that has a huge effect on your day. So so the more we kind of relax during the day, then obviously when we go to sleep, it's kind of an easier transition. So Yeah, and even just doing some nice things like shower before you sleep or having a bath or something like that. It's just different ways of kind of relaxing. And like a shower can help you when you've come from work. A shower can help you kind of put a close to the day. And, you know, it's like now I'm getting ready for a different phase of my life. And I remember I looked after children when I was young, and I had this pattern with them that I would start singing a set song. I would start singing it half an hour before sleep time. So they would start to know that when that song was coming, that it was kind of getting ready for sleep time. And with all these children, I never had a problem getting them to sleep. Their parents did. I didn't, because I kind of prepared well for it. You know, it's like, okay, half an hour to go. And then you get into a pattern, you know, reading a book or whatever it is, a story or something like that, and brushing teeth, all these things. And I think as adults, it's still good if we have routines, but we think we don't need them anymore. But actually, to have a routine is kind of telling yourself, okay, it's time now to kind of wind down the day and get ready for this act. And it's another act, isn't it? Sleeping is another act, but it's replenishing act. So I know there's going to be questions in a bit, but I just thought it might be good to do a little bit of relaxing just to kind of finish off the talk before we have some questions. And so what I like doing is I like getting myself into a kind of peaceful feeling. So the first thing is just to make sure your body's relaxed. You know, you may be sitting on a chair or a couch, or who knows, lying down. And so to get yourself into your body, to get into a place that's peaceful, and just bring yourself and just check, you know, is there any tension in your body, and just kind of let it go. And then bring your mind into the present moment. And the easiest way to do this is to watch your breath, because your breath is always present, and it's the classic, isn't it, of all meditation practices. So let's just watch our breath for a moment. That kind of natural in and out. Flow of life-giving force. So watch your breath come in. And watch your breath go out. Now start to pay attention to your mind. And you may notice that by watching your breath, your mind has slowed right down. And in our mind, we have thoughts. But we also have space between thoughts. Often we don't notice the space. Often we're more interested in our thoughts. You can be quite obsessed with thinking about our thinking. So for this little exercise, imagine that the space between your thoughts is far more important, more interesting. So you may watch the end of a thought, and after that ending of that thought, there's a space. So just become very interested in that space. Imagine that space is so important, because in that space is your own natural state of peace. It's always there. Peace is always there, like a backdrop behind your thoughts. It's always there. But often we're just focusing on the thinking and we forget that there's space. So by just focusing on the space and making it more important than the thoughts, we start to experience our own peace. It's a natural state. Peace is our natural state. Overthinking is not our natural state. Peace is our natural state. And actually, what happens is when we experience peace and feel more content, we start to like ourselves better. Because we're liking ourselves better, we feel happier. So this is a very easy way to experience peace. Just let your thought come to the end of a thought and just kind of elongate the space. And just enjoy your own peace. It's amazing, really, that it's always there. But when we get caught up in thinking, we miss it.
Thank you, Margaret. There's a few questions that have come through, so let me start with them for you.
Mm-hmm.
The very first one is, the person tries to get a sound sleep, but it often gets broken up through the night.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something you would suggest?
I think it's, again, looking at what you're doing, even basic things like fluid intake, you know, start early in the day and taper off. That's one. And many, as we get older, many of us do end up having broken sleep. I mean, as a child, I never had any broken sleep. But I think as you get older, it's a kind of phenomenon that happens. But I think it is like, you know, look at what you're eating, what you're drinking. Again, you know, just bring in something new, a new practice, like, as I mentioned, writing or taking a shower before you go to sleep. Bring in something new and then observe the difference. But do that new thing for a while and then see what difference it makes to you. I would suggest that. But definitely fluid intake.
Mm-hmm.
Start early in the day and taper off.
Thank you. Is there a good posture to use to get better sleep? And can you give the title of the book you mentioned early on in your talk?
In the bit before?
Yes, the bit before. Yes.
Okay. Okay, so I sleep on my back and I make sure my pillow is quite firm. I mean, I have quite a firm bed. So we have to find... It could be something like that. I mean, you can look at the basics, isn't it? That it could be that your bed's too soft or your bed's too hard or whatever. So we have to kind of find the right thing. And obviously, if you've got a partner, you have to kind of negotiate. But my pillow's quite firm and my bed's quite firm. And I have trained myself to sleep on my back. And the reason I did that is because, one, I end up having kind of some back problems. I slipped down the stairs, actually, so it was easier to lie on my back, and then I trained myself to do it because then I thought I can sleep anywhere on a plane or a train or anything. It's true, I can. So I would say that's the best position. But and also for some of us, if you have lower back problem, you might want to roll a towel and put it underneath your knees, or you can actually buy specific things that go into your knee, because if your legs raise, then your back, your lower back becomes flat. That can be much easier for a lot of people. If you are someone who's going to sleep on your side, you may want to put a cushion between your knees so that your knees aren't collapsing in, because that has effect on your hips and your back. So Yeah. If you can sleep on your back, it's good. But some people, they sleep, you know, they curl up. And I think if you've been doing that most of your life, then it's going to be quite a hard habit to change. But do make sure that you're protecting your back. The other one is the recovery position that they put people in literally if they've had an incident. That's actually quite a good one because that helps your breathing. So, but yeah, I sleep on my back.
Interesting. Okay. Next question. I'm quite a visual person. The job I do is very visual. I do experience strong imagery during sleep in dreams. And sometimes if I have bad experiences during the day, these come back right before I sleep, even if I try to switch them off. They appear as a pleasant dream, which wakes me during the night and leaves me tired as the sleep quality is not best later on. I do sports before going to bed, and that does give me a good sleep. However, what is the best way to shut this imagery off when I don't have the means to physically exhaust the body?
Yeah, I mean, I would try things like reflection, writing, write about your day. Maybe, you know, write about what happened in your day. Write about the interactions you had. Write about what went on. And sort of, it's almost like then you're getting it from, you know, your mind onto a piece of paper. It's like anything. And also maybe, you know, I think it's such a valuable thing that we really, all of us, to ask ourselves, what did I learn from today? Because it settles something in us. It kind of makes our, if we're looking at what we learned from the day, or we can ask ourselves, what was really meaningful about my day? Or what was really joyous about my day? And there might have been a little incident that happened that you just thought, wow, you know, you watched some children playing or something. It was just like something so nice. And it's kind of when you do this, it just increases the richness of your life. You just kind of start to see things that you otherwise will pass you by. You know, but it's like you start looking out for things in your day that have meaning and kind of record them. So I guess in all these things, it's just bringing in some kind of new practice, whatever suits you. But the ones I said, reflection, meditation, writing, these are all really, really helpful because they clear out the conscious mind before you open up your subconscious mind. I
hope that's helpful. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the great talk. Sometimes I put off going to sleep because when I go to bed, I have to face the fear of being alone or abandoned. So distractions such as Netflix until I pass out are preferable. Any thoughts?
Well, I'm going to admit there was a really difficult time in my life, years and years ago, I have to say. And I too was in the same situation. I didn't want to go to sleep until I was really, really tired because I didn't want to have to think. And I remember going home, on the way home, I would pick up 3 videos in case the first 2 didn't catch my interest. So I always had like a backup plan. And but what I learned over time is that it still doesn't help. In a way, whatever is in your life that needs to be faced, and maybe that you need some help with that, maybe learning to meditate would help that, you know, maybe going to a course where you learn about writing would help that. But I think it, at some point we have to face our fears, and usually the biggest fear is of fear itself, you know. So we've all got fears. But we can find ways to minimize the impact of those fears by building up our self-confidence and learning about ourselves and starting to know ourselves and you know, facing the fears and then kind of moving on from the fears. because, you know, one of my biggest fears in life was public speaking. And if I hadn't broken through that fear, I wouldn't be here today talking to you. So it was a really, really huge fear from childhood. But it's, you know, so we can surmount our fears, but it, you might need some help with it. You know.
Interesting. Face them. All right. I think you've answered this one, but you may have another thought on it. Sometimes when we go to sleep, our mind carries thoughts of situations that can that conflict with your sleep. How to calm those thoughts and memories down and settle the mind for sleep?
Yeah, I think it's getting into some kind of routine and where you have, you're doing something, you know. I mean, we all have to find our own way of what we do. So for some people it might work, you know, that you have a nice hot bath, and in that bath you reflect, you know, like what did I really learn from today? What was meaningful to me? What did I enjoy? So you're kind of consolidating your day, and then you're letting go of your day. This is, everyone's going to have their own way of doing it. Some people, they will sit and they will meditate, go into kind of peaceful feeling like we did in our experiment. But, you know, it's like somehow there has to be closure of that day, because otherwise you can't open the new page of the next day. You're kind of carrying it forward. So if you imagine that every day of your life is a new day, a new opportunity, even if something went terribly wrong yesterday, it doesn't necessarily mean that tomorrow is going to be the same. And so it's like a new chance. Every day is a new beginning. And so it's finding a way that works for you, that you bring closure to the day. Like it might be, I mean, I remember when I was working and I was in a really, really busy job. And I remember when I would close the office door when I came out, and I would say, and I would write, before I left the office, I would write a note to myself, what I need to do when I first come in the morning. And when I close that door, it's like, that part of my life is finished now. I'm going to go and have my evening. That is my time. So it's kind of finding ways to, in a bit way, compartmentalize your life, you know, that you work is work and home is home, and try and find ways, you know, like when you open your own front door, you're going into a different space. So, and find something that suits you to help bring that closure. You know, maybe you light a candle and you sit and reflect, or you sit and meditate. And then there's a point where you blow out that candle, and that starts to symbolize, okay, that day's over now. So it's finding something that works for you. But I mean, I have gained a lot from learning to meditate, for sure. And that's okay. Really helped me.
I'm going to combine two questions here. If you live on your own in a studio flat, how do you can't leave your equipment outside your room. What would you specify for that? And the other one that kind of combines into that is, how would you recommend to organize a bedroom, which is also you working from home in a house share? And it really is the only place that you can comfortably work.
Yes. Yeah, I've got some thoughts about this. So I would say, okay, if you can't put your equipment outside the room, don't let it be charging when you're asleep. Charge it up either when you get up in the morning and you're awake, you're up, charge it then, or charge it before you go. But don't let it be when you're asleep. So when you're actually sleeping, have everything off. And maybe put it a furthest point away from the bed. Yeah. So that I would say definitely, because there's sometimes when I'm traveling and, you know, it's all the equipment's in your room, but I don't charge it while I'm sleeping. So, but as soon as I get up, plug it in. Cause we've got, you know, we've got more control of our conscious mind than our subconscious mind. So, you know, this is the thing is, And it's very subtle, these beep, beep, beeps coming in and things happening while we're sleeping. The second point I would say is keep your space tidy, keep your space neat and tidy, and minimalize as much as you can, because if you've got work in one area, and I'm in a shared house, I have one room, and I work as well, not so much from here, but I have to have all my work stuff, but I make sure it's really tidy. It's in a cupboard, it's put away, or, you know, put it in a box and put it away, but keep your area tidy, and that will help a lot. Because, you know, even if our cupboards are messy, it does have an effect. And I've always noticed that when I do a kind of letting go, sort of clearing out, letting go, and take out anything I don't need anymore and move it on or clear up my paperwork, I always sleep much better that night. So, so it's always good every so often to go through things like, am I really using this? Have I used it in 2 years? If you haven't used it in 2 years, pretty unlikely you're going to use it again. Just think about keeping the space neat and tidy. And when you finish with your desk, tidy it up, because that's a kind of closure again, you see.
Thank you. Okay, so this is about working and sleep. So there's two questions come through. One of them is, if you live in one time zone, but your clients live in another time zone, it could be the opposite side of the world. There's two parts to this. How many hours sleep is mandatory for the body? And how can you allow your mind to rest well? And the other one that kind of goes along with this is, how can you create boundaries for your colleagues in order not to work too late? So both of those.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's, the mandatory time, I think we're all a bit different. And I have heard people say that they can survive on 4 hours sleep. But, you know, there's a lot of research now saying that the link between not sleep deprivation and some of the later illnesses we get in life can be quite linked with not having enough sleep. So we have to be really careful that we, in a way, don't have an ego around, oh, I don't need to sleep too much, because the repercussions may not show up till later. So I know some people who survive on 5 hours sleep, but I would say more is better, you know, like six, I can function on six, but I'm much better when I've had seven, you know, and I think we have to work that out for ourselves. Some people, if they get too much sleep, it doesn't help them. And they say, actually, if you don't get enough sleep in the week and you're trying to catch up on the weekend, it doesn't really work like that. It's got to be a kind of regular thing. So that, and then when you're working different time zones, I mean, all these things, you just have to do the best you can, isn't it? And, you know, it might be after you get off the call, write a few notes down so that you remember what you got to do. And then, you know, you can pick up there so that you're not trying to remember what I've got to remember. Because that's the worst thing, isn't it? Is if you're lying in bed and you're thinking, oh, I don't want to forget this in the morning, it's much better to get up and write it down, then go back to bed, then thinking, I mustn't forget this, I mustn't forget that, because that is putting anxiety on you. And that's what we want to try and avoid when we're in bed, is anxiety, because that's kind of such a block to sleep, or good, it's a block to good sleep. And the second one, Artie, I've forgotten.
How do you create boundaries for your colleagues in order not to work too late?
I mean, that could mean many different things, but I think it's about self-respect. I mean, I think when we go to a job, we're paid for doing so many hours, and that's what we're paid for. But we've created cultures now where everybody's working past those hours because there's a fear that I might lose my job. But I think it's about, when you are at work, work really well. You know, it's like, when you're there, do it with a true heart, a good heart, you know, put your best effort into it. But when it's time to go, go. And I think if you're someone who puts really good effort into your art and you get good results from what you do, no one's going to want to get rid of you. That'd be my thoughts.
Any suggestions about how to communicate boundaries?
Brave conversations, isn't it? I mean, if you're, I think it's about talking, isn't it? It's about being willing to talk about it with someone, and tell them what you feel, or how something affects you. That's always the best approach. How does something affects you, rather than trying to tell them what to do, to come from the angle of this is affecting me. Can we discuss it? And you have to find the right time to discuss it. If something's just happened, often it's not the right time to discuss it. Maybe when you've got no emotional charge left, then you can say, that thing that happened last Tuesday, can we discuss that now? Because it created a scenario for me that meant that I didn't get a lot of sleep. So I think it is a brave conversation, isn't it?
Wow, I never connected brave and sleep together, but that is so true.
I mean, when I was growing up, my sister, because I shared a room with two other sisters, and one sister was always going to bed early, so that wasn't a problem. But the other one would, sit on the bed and be reading. Light was on. We only had one light. We didn't have lamps, one light. And I'd be always saying to her, I said, Catherine, can you turn the light off? Please turn the light off. I mean, it was like the every night. So I wasn't so good at boundaries then, but I did ask. And I'd say to my mum, Mum, she stays up late reading and we can't sleep. So I think then my mum sorted it out.
That point, you're grateful for your parents, that's for sure. Two last questions that are coming up. One of them is about insomnia. Is there something you would advise for that? And within that, also, another question is, not being able to sleep before 1 a.m. What can I do to change that pattern? So there's two questions there.
I'll start with the second one actually, because this is, I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's changed that pattern, and it might be good to look back. And this is kind of also maybe to the insomnia as well. Look back to when the pattern started and what was going on in your life at that time. It may be that that pattern started when you were a student. Or it may be it started when you had to stay up, you were staying up waiting for your kids to come home after they'd been out. I mean, I we each have our thing, but to look back when the pattern started, and then it's about, first thing is telling yourself that you don't need that pattern anymore. Life is different now. I don't need that pattern. And then it's you might need to go for a few days where you get up really early, even though you go to bed late. You set your alarm and you go really get up really early and go for a walk or something like that, so that you'll start to get tired earlier. So, because often when people go to bed late, they sleep in late. So it's about, you're going to have to shift that whole thing. So it might be that you're going to have a couple of days where you walk around a bit groggy, and then it's like gradually readdressing the pattern. But you also have to think about, do I really want to change it? What is making me stay up till that time? What am I gaining? And what am I losing? So it's probably doing it gradually, but the first bit might be a bit drastic to make these big changes. But there'd be definitely behind the pattern, there's some kind of thought process or some belief system. Maybe you don't feel you've got enough time in your life, or something like that. There's going to be some belief system that's kind of fueling that. Yeah, that'd be. And insomnia is a tricky one because it's a medical condition, and you might need medical help for that one. And there are some sleep clinics you might want to find out and go and see. But there are some famous people who are insomniac. Charles Dickens was an insomniac, and he used to spend his time walking around London. Not that I'm advising you to do this, but that's how he got his characters. So he made use of his insomnia. And I think there's some quite famous people, other famous people who are insomniacs. And I think it's, again, it's looking back, when has it always been there, or was there a time when when it started and try and get in touch with what was going on in your life that made that pattern start. Because there may need to be some healing about that area of your life to also undo the insomnia as well. But it can be considered a medical condition, just like narcolepsy is a medical condition. And so medical help might be needed for that.
Okay. This one's just come through. So wasn't going to be the last one now, unfortunately. So here goes. I try to go to bed earlier when I'm really tired, but I find I struggle to sleep even more so and end up getting less sleep than if I'd gone to bed later. Mm-hmm. Even when I do this for many weeks, is there anything I can do? Should I say it again?
Yes, because it's quite an interesting one, isn't it? Because yes. She's actually tired and she's going to bed. I think I would just go back to what I said before. Just bring some new practice in. So, you know, maybe you actually, before you get into bed, you just write something or you read something nice, or, you know, there's lots of kind of inspiring material. Yeah, so just to bring some kind of new practice in, or to kind of get a routine that you're doing exactly the same thing for the hour before, so that your body is kind of also, your mind saying I'm tired, but your body's also got to register that you're tired. And I think also what we've most important to avoid is that we don't have anxiety around it. Because if we've got, you know, I used to, I heard, you know, if you don't get 8 hours sleep, you know. So I used to count. Oh my gosh, I'm only going to have 7. I'm only going to have 6.5. So it was creating a kind of anxiety. So the most important thing is to go to bed peacefully. You know, that's the most important thing.
Uh-huh. I know we're running over time, but I'm going to give you this last question. Can you expand on the idea of space after each thought? How do you get it?
Okay, so just, you know, like just, you see, the thing is we don't often notice it because we're thinking a lot. But if you imagine in music, you have notes and you have space, and the notes and the space together make the music. If it was just all sound and no space, it'd be a very different quality of music. So classical music is a mixture of notes and space, and some notes are like on the beat, some 1, 2. And say heavy metal music's got more beats and less space, so it has a different vibration. And if like a Tibetan bowl, you just strike it once, but the sound goes on for ages. Have you noticed that? So it's a bit like that. It's like you, the note is a bit like a thought. And when we're having lots of thoughts, there's no space going on. But as we start to observe our thoughts, to watch our thoughts, to kind of even asking myself the question, what am I thinking? You're starting to observe your thoughts. And when you observe them, it all starts to slow down a bit. And you'll start to notice that as your thoughts slow down, there's a space between a thought and the next thought. It's just usually we're not aware of it. We're just so more interested in the thinking. So in that exercise, we were becoming more interested in the space. Because imagine that the space is like a doorway into a very beautiful experience. Thinking is not a doorway. Space is the doorway. So when you start to realize that, wow, the space is the doorway, then you'll want to slow down your thinking. And then also what you can do is to think about, if I'm having a really nice thought, like a thought of gratitude, it has an energy about it. And it's a bit like that Tibetan bowl. You hit one note and then that the sound of that hit lasts for ages. And the same thing, if you kind of savor a thought of gratitude, the energy of that thought fills the space. Again, you have a very nice experience. That's what I was meaning.
Lovely, thank you. A musical note in my mind, sounds lovely. So There have been lots of thank yous for your talk this evening. Many, many people have sent in messages saying thank you. Thank you very much, and we look forward to you joining us next month. And Margaret, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Good night, and good night. Stay safe.